You're listening to the Bethel University Chapel Podcast, recorded from the Everest Rohr Chapel Fine Arts Center in Mishawaka, Indiana. Thanks for listening.
Good morning, everyone. I think you got my resume already. But I was asked to do this chapel and tell my story. I told my best friend, and best friends are very truthful with you. And she said to me, well, what story are you going to tell? And by that she meant, you have the story that you tell people when they say, you know, tell me about yourself, or how are you doing? You have this, I'm fine, and you tell this story about yourself. And there's that story. And then I thought, what she challenged me with was, what if I told more of my story? What if I got a little authentic? Seems scary to me. And I was like, well, by this time at Biola, where I went to as a Christian school, by this time, the chapel would have dwindled enough for it to be a little bit more intimate. Not several hundred people is sharing my story. And so I will just open up to you. I just didn't change my story that I decided on when Sean first asked me to speak. So I'm gonna be authentic with you. Please don't take pictures. Don't tell other people, okay? We're just gonna be authentic. So let me go all the way back. I am from Los Angeles, California, but my family hails from Kentucky and from Texas and as well as Indiana. And how that happened, this is my father with my son. My father's name is John Davis. He was born in 1945. If you think about what was happening during the time in which he was raised, his grandmother was a slave. His grandfather was run out of Kentucky by the KKK, and that's what landed him to go north into Indiana. He was born in Indianapolis, Indiana. Between 1945 and 1965, if you know, there's this civil rights movement. He was born under segregation, so he went to segregated schools. He actually he joined the military at the age of 18. He was a Navy man. And in that experience, he grew up pretty strong. His family raised him to be very strong, but he actually had to go through pretty much trials and tribulations. He met my mother after being in the military for a while. He moved to California. And he's like, oh, seems like the land of the beauty. Let me go see some palm trees. I'm tired of the snow. And so he moved into California and met my mom. She had already had one child by then. I'm gonna show a bunch of embarrassing pictures. So I said to take pictures. I am one of three. My older brother had a dad, and that dad, we lived in South Central Los Angeles. People say LA. They don't mean my LA, I mean the real LA, the hood. And in that, my brother, dad was a Crip. He was involved in gangs, and he actually went to jail. And he went to jail for murder. He's currently in jail for murder for life. My dad came along, my mom had me. My dad and my mom had a tumultuous relationship. They're good people. Separately, in the house, they were pretty tumultuous. So my mom moved on and got with another guy who had my younger brother, Chris, off to the right. I'm a middle child. Any middle child in here? Children? Okay, we got issues. We're not the oldest. We're not the youngest, so we don't get all the best things that came in the beginning, not all the greatest things that came in the end. We're fighting for our place in the world. That is me, all of me. In addition to that, I and my brother's grown up, so my older brother on to the right, my younger brother off to the left. I did have glasses when I was young. My hair has always been a journey. and a reflection of beauty in the Black community. I grew up with my brothers, is just my mom. So I was, my mom kind of raised me, yeah, she would say, a single mom. And in that, she really struggled. And we were on welfare, we were on Section 8, and she could barely afford to make ends meet, even with the help of my dad kind of away out of the house. I found solace, though, going to church. Church became my thing. I was really involved in the church. And but at the age of about 16, so I'm gonna date myself a little bit, in the 90s, the U.S. kind of went through a little bit of change where it had some questions about those who were on welfare for a long time. At that point, I'm just a child, but my mom had been on welfare for the duration of my older brother's life. So at that time, they were like, let's get people to work. And as a part of getting people to work, if you have three kids and you're on your own, it was very hard to find childcare. So my mom got kicked off of welfare and told to go to work, and she did for a little bit, but she didn't make enough to make ends meet. So we got evicted. At the age of 16, my mom was evicted from her house. And me and my older brother, who were a little older than, 6 years older than my youngest brother, we decided, you know what, let's make sure my little brother has a place to stay with my mom, and then we'll move house to house. So in many ways, I was transient or homeless at the age of 16. Now, when you grow up without a lot, getting a job was a big deal. I just wanted to work. God bless you guys, you're in college. And yes, later on, I did go to college, but I had no intention of going to college. I was like, let me just get a job so I can pay the bills, so I can make sure that I'm never evicted one day, that I have a place to stay. Those were the most important things to me. I didn't think, oh, college leads to job. I was like, no, I actually have to have a place to stay now. So the friend at the bottom left, her name is Monique. We were in the kind of same, similar situation, but still going in church. I was like, at church, I was in the church choir singing Watermelon. Like, I was there like every day. And as a part of that, my church ended up hiring me as a receptionist. And I stayed and worked in that job for about 2 years. I was at a women's conference and at the church, and a woman there, her name was Marla Campbell, and she said, you know, have you ever thought about going to college? Have you heard of Biola? I'm like, I don't know what what is a Biola? I didn't know much about Christian higher ed. And she suggested that we take a look at the school. And I came and experienced the campus, had people pray at class, all the great things you experience when you were looking at Bethel. That was my experience at Biola. And so I was sitting outside under a tree, and I was like, could I go here? This seems expensive. just like many of you, this seems expensive. How can I attend? And so I said, you know what, Lord, I submit to you in your way, and if this is where you want me to go, I am Thomas. You have to show me your hands. I will do what you say, but faith without works is dead, Lord. Let me see the work. Let me see the work. So I did do the work, though. I applied for every scholarship that I could, and I made it to Biola. If you don't, if you're wondering, how did she drop out of high school, end up in college where I went to community college at night? Once I found out that I wanted to go to Biola, I started taking classes with this lady, Monique. We took one class at a time, decided majors kind of together, and then went off to college. So that's a little bit of that story. Then met my husband while I was in college, and we were dating senior year, but not at the school at Biola. We met outside of Biola. I was like, it's ring. I hear ring by spring. Aren't you supposed to get a husband in college? At my senior year, I was just walking around, you know, just focused on my next stage. Me and my husband got married, and he decided to go to seminary. He went to seminary out at by Geneva College, and then after a year of that, or actually 6 months, he decided to transfer to another seminary. And I was like, you know, I've never heard of that before. You transfer on the undergrad, but when you get to grad school, you don't transfer. So I was like, well, where are we going? He was like, we'll go to Mississippi. I was like, anybody from Mississippi here? Because I don't want to disrespect. I mean, sweet tea. The sweet tea is just unique there. but from a California girl, I mean, that was outside of my element to move there. So we moved to Mississippi and then on back home. I've had many great professional experiences. Most people think I graduated from a Christian high school. When you guys said did the fancy versus what is normal? I said plain versus fancy. I was like, I am fancy. Okay, that is totally me. But that's what you see mostly on the outside. I've had a really rough upbringing to get to where I am. But God has blessed me. I've been able to be in different positions, and here as vice president. You see me more in the background. If you've never seen me before, that's me doing my job well, lifting up my team, financial aid, and admissions to really help and serve you. Okay, I've led many teams, big teams, small teams. If you're thinking about going to business, if you're thinking about becoming a professional, I've done a little bit of it all. I will say, that's something that I've learned along the way, though. I've actually been able to be mentored by many people, poured into. This is the time in college to let yourself soak it in as like a sponge. And because I came from humble beginnings, I was just open. Lord, use me. Let me learn from others. So this is the president of Biola at the right with his wife, and the former president of Azusa Pacific and his wife. Some of the largest Christian universities in the nation. So I've been exposed to many things, but what I will say is that life is not as easy as it seems. Everybody wants to be successful until they see what it takes. You think about the person who's next to you, and you think about their story, and you think about those who've come up on this stage or led in many other different ways. What has been their story? You never know kind of what's beyond what you see. And for me, it has been a long and treacherous journey. I have two more stories to tell you, though, and this is of this student. This is J.P. Foster. I was a admissions counselor, so I came out of college and I was roaring. I was like, you know, what am I going to do with my life? And actually, I was like, if I could do anything, I would have somebody pay me to talk. I mean, is that a job somewhere? If you're fearful, I'm not fearful of being on stage. And I was like, somebody's gonna pay me to talk. That's gonna be my job one day. And so I was like, oh, admissions, okay. Pay me to talk about the school that I know. I barely have to even learn anything. That would be great. So I started working in admissions. And one of the things, the jobs of being in admissions, sometimes, yes, people decide where they wanna go and they sign up for an appointment. They don't always do that. Sometimes you just walk in, you're like, maybe I'll go check out Bethel today. Well, that admissions counselor is doing a bunch of things at the same time, and we call these walk-ins. When you guys walk, you just don't tell us you're coming. You come, and we turn on, and we're like, yeah, like we expect you to be here. No, we're traumatized. We're like, I had a million things to do today, and you came in, but you're our most important focused person. So I get off at 4:30, and at that time, I was getting off at 4:30 as well. Student walks in, JP walks in. And he's like, I just checked out Biola at the time. And he was like, can I have a tour? Just checking it out, I feel maybe led to come here. And it was 3:00, y'all. Okay, the tour is 1 hour. The appointment is 30 minutes. Maybe I can get through it all, but I'm just thinking about the end of the day. And sometimes these things happen. So I dropped everything, as we should, as you may have experienced. And I gave the student an appointment. I walked him through campus. I barely remember any of it. So 10 years later. Oh, by the way, sorry, let me tell you this part of it. He came in with his transcript, y'all. Okay, I don't know. How many 3.5s in high school in here? 3.0, 3.5, if you're ready to admit it. I'm sure you guys are very smart. For him, he walked in with a 1.9. I was like, a 1.9. I spent an hour and a half with somebody who can't even be admitted to the university. But he felt like God was calling him. So I decided, I was like, you know what? He was like, what do I need to do? I said, you got to go back to community college. I went to community college. Go back to community college, get a 4.0, and then we'll take a look. Now, a year later, he comes back with that GPA and has all A's, 1 B. I forgot what I had told him, y'all. I forgot I told him he needed a 4.0 because I sure did not check with my director of admissions if that's what he needed. I just thought, make him shoot for the stars and he'll come in. So he came in, he was crying, y'all. I was like, what did the man tell you? I don't remember. I went to the director. I was like, is this fine? He was like, yeah, he got admitted. Now, I told you about my husband. He moved me to Pennsylvania. So I didn't hear the rest of his story. Sometimes you're involved in people's stories and you're just one part of that story. So come back to Biola. Remember, I moved back to California. I was having a rough day. I was having a rough season in my life overall. And I ran into JP. I just left my office and went to the dining commons and ran into JP. He has a Biola alumni shirt on. And I'm like, not only did he end up enrolling, he ended up graduating. But then why is he here in the middle of the day? Like, what is his job? And I found out that he was teaching. He's like, I teach here. I was like, what do you mean? Well, God called him to ministry. He did ministry program at Biola. And then he graduated and then ended up teaching there. In addition to that, because God had called him to ministry, he ended up being a pastor at one of the largest African-American churches in LA. He actually is so amazing because the Lakers play in the Staples Center, but before they played in the Staples Center, a huge arena, they played in this thing called the Great Western Forum. And that was similar in size to the seats to play, obviously, any NBA team needs that. That's where that church is. That's how big that church is. He just got installed as the pastor of that church. You never know what part you play in somebody's story, or actually what part he played in mine. Because at that period of time where I ran into him and he blessed my life, I was actually going through a hard story. Now, a little bit about me. I know so much about my history. I know so much, like, how do you know where your people were from? As African Americans, we can only go back so far, particularly to this area. But I am a fan of Ancestry.com. Now, this is part of a plug. I'm not getting paid for them, but I'll tell you, don't do it. But there's exciting things about it. So when you take Ancestry and you do the DNA test, I took the DNA test and it was really cool. They actually say, they tell you where your history is. Now, some of you may know, well, my parents or my family hails from England or hails from Ireland. For me, as an African American, I can't trace that. I can't trace, there are no records really that exist prior to slavery for African Americans in this country. So this was big for me. I had always been doing my tree and trying to figure out where I'm from. And so everybody had always said I had Nigerian features. So I was like, yes, I'm Nigerian, okay? I can claim it. I know that I am. There's a lot of other stuff that's in there. I don't know what it is, but I was like, that's pretty cool. When you take the test, you get this. But before you can get this, they ask you a series of questions. They say, do you want to be connected to your cousins or other people who are also doing the search? And because I was so excited about getting to this, I was like, sure, I clicked there. So, at the period of time where I met JP the second time, I found out another result. What is this? I told you my dad's name is John Davis from Indianapolis. So who is James Taylor, y'all? Who is this? What Jerry Springer, Steve Wilkos situation is going on here? Who is the father? I broke down, y'all, because part of my story is my dad's story. My dad is a very important figure in my life, to find out that he wasn't my dad. Now, I'm gonna look over to this corner because the older generation says there was so many great things back in the day and y'all are falling away, new generation. And I'm like, y'all was a rolling stone. Y'all had stuff going on back then and y'all didn't have DNA tests and stuff. And now we do. I was traumatized, obviously. I was connected to other cousins, so I got to talk about it. I actually have four more siblings that I didn't know about through James. I actually went straight to counseling. I couldn't really talk about it. And I was struggling with that during that day where I met GP. Part of that story is that I ended up talking to my brothers about it. That's the only people I felt. Now, I'm my dad, John Davis, I'm his only biological daughter, our only biological child. And my dad is an only child. And his mother has passed away at this point. He has no living siblings. He actually didn't have any living cousins. All died from cancer in the Indianapolis area. So I was faced with, first of all, I need to talk to my mama, and I don't know how to ask her what had happened. Just being real. So my little brother, he said, bring me the paperwork. I swear, this is reality TV in its finest, y'all. He made me download everything, and he set up this meeting with my mom, and he was like, who is James? He just like slid it to her, who is James? And we got older pictures of him. And I was like, okay, kind of tell me that story and how that landed. She couldn't remember. And there's reasons why she had issues. My mother is schizophrenic, and she's in living in a halfway kind of house to help her make sure that she stays on her meds. There's a reason for everyone's story. I mean, even God used David and Bathsheba, and they had children out of it who ended up doing great things and leading the people in many ways. So that's part of my story too. It's this opportunity that God gave me through life to be raised by someone who is outstanding and an amazing example of what it means to kind of lead and lead humbly. But on the other side, I got to meet this guy named James. And I now have two sisters. I was raised by brothers. Anybody raised with brothers, just a sister and a brother? Oh my gosh, all I did, he cut the head of the Barbies out and threw them away, and we played video games and did wrestling, okay? Now I have sisters that are in my life through this experience. I want you guys to pray with me, though. Another place of authenticity for myself is now that I have to manage this idea of having two dads. I would say a dad, and I honestly don't know what to call James. But I want you to pray with me. Both of them are going through some significant health issues. My father, John Davis, got diagnosed with cancer in December. And this last week, found out that it spread to multiple parts of his body. So that's heavy on me. These are the things that you don't see when people are smiling. And then James has been through three strokes. And so they're both around the same age. They both live in California. So I'll be going back to California this week to see them. So I'm gonna ask you to pray with me. I'm gonna close with this, and I'm gonna ask you to pray with me. Who are you? When people ask, who are you, for you to share your story with them or maybe on this stage, how authentic are you going to be? Now, not all places are safe, right? So you gotta choose when to do this. But sometimes telling our story authentically is a blessing to somebody else. You don't know what they're going through. Whose story do you wonder about? Think about when you're in church, or when you're at home, or you see somebody go around a street corner, or you're at Starbucks, and you wonder, what is their story? Realize that there's something deeper. Some people are hurting, and you don't even know it. So if you bow your heads, please pray with me for my dad, and I'll pray with you for your story and for your family. Dear Heavenly Father, Father, you are all of our fathers. And we take that in, no, not even lightly, Lord. And we thank you that you cover us and you lead and you guide us in ways that we can't even see. You have dreams and hopes for us that we can't even imagine. And I thank you, Lord, for your leading in my life. I pray for my father now, for John Davis. I pray that you would heal him, Lord, like only you can. I pray that you would be with him during his time of struggle, Lord, and that you would make this pathway easy. I pray for the doctors and the surgeons and everyone involved in his care. And also I pray for James. And I thank you for leading him to my life at such a time as this that only you know. And I pray for his ailments, Lord, that you would keep him healthy and you would make his life a testimony to yourself. I pray for everyone in this room, Lord. I know that some people are struggling. I know that there's more to the story than what I see when I'm walking across campus, in the classroom, or often in chapel. That there's more of the stuff that's going on. And I pray that you would bind us together, Lord, as your people, to edify each other, Lord, to hear each other's story, and to lean upon each other, because we are the body. As you say, the hand and the foot, we work together, Lord. And I pray for each and every one person here that they are seen and known by you and seen and known by each other. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thanks, Amanda. So good.
Thanks for listening to the Bethel University Chapel Podcast. Subscribe to the podcast and get more information at chapel.betheluniversity.edu or check us out on the iTunes Store by searching for Bethel University Chapel.